call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can turn it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack.
Yo. And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest, blackest, and funniest sports podcast you've heard in your entire life. I'm coming straight from the side, going down. Audio Shop Talk brought to you right in your ear hole by yours truly, Joseph Ward, a.k.a. Hell, I don't have no a.k.a. today. It's goddamn Joseph Ward today. Really going down in the south, bringing you another episode of the Fix Sports Podcast. And, man, we trucking along in this season. What's this, episode 26 or 27? I never know which episode it is. I need to stay on top of that. Like, I know an episode, but I don't know. Because that's just how much I love doing this shit, man. I just get on and start talking. I have my shit together. I get on and start talking. I'd be excited. I'd be... Yeah, but we here, though. Another episode in the books. Another thing to get down. Another thing. I finally got my new computer. Oh, I finally got my new computer, man. We back in business. We got things set up. Shit, expect shit to be bigger, better, more exciting, more all that extra shit. Expect the fancy shit to start happening, right? Because it's going down, man. It's really going down. That's a great day. It's a great week. And we're going to make it better. Yeah, Corona's still out, but we got to make the best of our lives and our situations and our times right here. Because if we don't, we could be around here extra, extra depressed. And remember that the month of August is Mental Health Awareness Month for us here at the Freedom Train Network. And we want to make sure that we're using this month to bring as much attention and have as many conversations surrounding mental health, especially mental health within the black community. Black Americans doing a better job of taking care of our mental health than we did in the past, but it needs to improve greatly. It really needs to improve greatly. We need to do more, have more resources. So the Freedom Train Network, we decided we want to be a part of these conversations, part of these initiatives, these movements, to make sure that black mental health is brought to the forefront and is taken serious and we're really taken care of. A lot of y'all people might not think mental health illness may not be an issue in the black community. And then I question, how involved in the black community are you? Go to a lot of these low-income communities. You can sit at the corner store all day and you can see the people with their mental health illnesses. You can see it with your own eyes. So if you're a person that's like, well, we ain't suffering from mental health illness, go to your community. Go sit in the community. Go sit in low-income black communities, and you'll see. It ain't just got to be low-income black communities. Black people from all walks of life, from all different economic standpoints, have mental health issues, and we want to make sure that we be a part of our healing. So that's why we're here. But also, remember that the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go. The stories of the sung and unsung heroes of the African diaspora. And to access this information that On the Shoulders of Giants has for you, all you have to do is visit their website at www.ontheshoulders1.com. And that way you can see their On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the On the Shoulders of Giants blog, the On the Shoulders of Giants African History Curriculum app, which is available at www.ontheshoulders1.com. Check out the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, youtube.com/ontheshoulders1. The Owner Shows of Giants the Owner Shows of Giants online course, which is available on Patreon at patreon.com/OTSOG. And, of course, educational classes, educational sessions, lectures, keynote speaking sessions, all those things. Of course, we got this Rona going on now, but we could do it all virtually. And remember, Owner Shows of Giants information can be accessed through smart TVs, smartphones, smart boards, tablets, computers, laptops, anything. All those mediums on the shoulders of giants have that. And now you got to do a visit the website at www.ontheshoulders1.com. Yo, what we talking about today, Willie? What we talking about today, man? We got some good stories today. We got some basketball. We got some football, baseball. Of course, we got to bring y'all up on scores, what's happening around the league and everything. So our HBCU spotlight, young man named Trenton Cannon, a former Virginia State running back named Trenton Cannon, is signed by the Carolina Panthers. And so that's our HBCU spotlight. HBCU news. I hope I'm saying this young man's name right. Noel. N-O-J-E-L. Noel Easton or Nojel Easton, whatever. But he's a P5 transfer, and he's coming to Howard. I think he comes from Purdue to Howard. So we're going to talk about that in our HBCU news. Also, FAMU. Fam goddamn you. I don't understand this one. And I'm definitely going to give my real opinion on this. But FAMU, like North Carolina A&T, I told you about last week, and a lot of other schools, they're still trying to play football in the middle of all this goddamn corona going on. And I don't understand that. Sport is not that important, but we're going to talk about it. Of course, we're going to jump into our mental health segment. I want to start off talking about mental health, and I found this article that the NCAA put up. It's titled Mind, Body, and Sport, the Psychologist's Perspective. So we're talking about an understanding of the student-athlete mental wellness. What are student-athletes? Where's their mental state? Are they well? Aren't they well? Like, what's happening? What other different factors are going on? So we're going to explore that. All right. Now, I normally wouldn't talk about this, but, hell, they put it out, so I said let me talk about it. So my favorite – probably my favorite athlete of all time, my favorite football player of all time, Emmitt Smith. Him and his wife, Pat Smith, they are getting a divorce after 20 years. You know, like I said, usually I don't really deal with the gossip stuff, but it's Emmitt Smith, and they put the news out. If they wouldn't put it out, that'd be different. But they put it out, so I'm talking about it. One time for the Pac-12, man, for the Pac-12 football players, hashtag We Are United. That the Pac-12 players have gotten together and put their stuff on paper, got organized, and say, you know what, we're standing up against the NCAA. We have demands, and we want our demands met, and if our demands don't get met, shit, fuck this football here. So we're going to get into that. San Diego Chargers defensive end Joey Bosa has a contract extension. He got a new contract. Motherfucker got paid. Motherfucker got paid. So we're going to look at the different components of the contract and everything he got going on. So, there's a COVID outbreak in the Major League Baseball, and the blame is being thrown around. So, what brought this to my attention was I saw that it was saying Major League Baseball commissioner is blaming, he's basically blaming the players in some of these articles. They're saying he's blaming the players for the COVID outbreak. I mean, shit, you the commissioner. So, if anything go wrong, that's on you, right? Because you're the commissioner. So, hey, gonna get into that. We're gonna get into some update you on the latest for the past week, the scores in Major League Baseball, this past week scores in the WNBA, as well as this past week scores in the NBA. Then my weekly rant. I got two rants this week. There's a this one funny as shit though. The catcher from the Toronto Blue Jays basically got caught jacking off in the parking lot. He was in the parking lot beating at me, and he got caught by the police. So we're gonna let his ass have it. And the final one is a former Angels employee named Eric K is charged with distributing fentanyl in connection to the death of former MLB player Tyler Skaggs. So these are the things that we are covering in this week's episode of Lay Fix. sports podcast. But you know, we got to start this thing off right because we got that HBCU spotlight. We got to start this thing off right because we got that HBCU. Like this in this HBCU spotlight. So, as I said, Trenton Cannon is signed by the Carolina Panthers. So, after spending a New York minute with the Jets, get it? New York minute with the Jets, get it? So, Trenton Cannon is headed south again. Come on home, cuz, come on home. The former Virginia State running back has signed with the Carolina Panthers off waivers. He was acquired about 24 hours after being waived by the Jets. Cannon appeared in all 16 games as a reserve running back for the as a rookie and played 19% of the New York Jets' offensive snaps in 2018. So he got into the league 18. So this upcoming year is going to be second year. But the Hampton native has dealt with foot and ankle injuries last year and was placed on injured reserve on November 1st. A two-time HBCU Game Day All-American and CIAA Offensive Player of the Year, Trenton Cannon rushed for 4,251 yards in his career. He scored 35 touchdowns on the ground his final two seasons at Virginia State. Extremely versatile, he caught a career-high 21 passes in 2017 for three scores and was an elite kick returner. After leading VSU to an unbeaten regular season and a CIAA championship, Cannon was drafted in the sixth round by the Jets. He played primarily on special teams as a rookie, but did get a little bit of action up in that backfield. So that's what's up. The team switched coaching staffs after his rookie season, and he saw a reduced role before being placed on the injured reserve list. He joins the Carolina Panthers in a new regime under Matt Rule. So, this year, of course, you know Christian McCaffrey is the starting running back for the Carolina Panthers. I haven't looked at the Carolina Panthers' depth chart, but I do know. Let me Google real quick. Carolina Panthers depth chart. I'm gonna spell it right. So, Carolina Panthers depth chart 2020. Let's see where he, if they got my man Trent on that depth chart. Trent Cannon, okay. So, as of right now, they have, for the running backs, they have Trent Cannon as fourth string, but he's still on the team. They have Christian McCaffrey, Reggie Bonifon, dude named Mike Davis, and Trenton Cannon. Hey, man, but forget all that. Trent, you're going to ball out. You're going to move to second string. So it's all good. But I want to give shout-outs to the homeboy, Trenton Cannon, getting that new contract, getting on that new team, and making sure he get down and do what he do. Why? Because HBCU players are ballers, too. And this spotlight is always a reminder, for one, that HBCU players be out here. HBCU athletes be out here getting in. They be balling, but they also go to the next level. So, everybody, man, y'all put your hands together for the homeboy Trent Cannon for being signed by the Carolina Panthers. Really? Come in there. He's a Panther. He's a cat. He's a Panther. Know that. I said that before. Trent is a Panther. Hey, Trent is a Panther. Trent is a Panther. Hey, Trent is a Panther. So, one time for the young man, Trent Cannon, for being signed by the Carolina Panthers. I wish you much success on your career, my brother. Hope you have a long-lasting, successful NFL career. And, man, do what you do. Go out there and ball out. Go out there and ball out, my brother. For that there, in honor of Trent Cannon, hope It's our HBCU spot light. For the HBCU spotlight, you heard me? Going down, you heard me? HBCU spotlight, you heard me? Have you heard me? You heard me? Because you ain't heard me, you ain't heard, you ain't heard nothing, you heard me. Heard me, heard me, no matter. All right. HBCU news, right? Noel or no jail? I don't know. I don't know. They be spelling stuff different these days. I don't know, but Easton, Mr. Easton, has landed at Howard, transferred from Purdue to Howard. No L or no jail or no Yale. I don't know. Mr. Easton was looking for a home and found one in Washington, D.C. The former Purdue wing has committed to Howard University after 3 years in the Midwest. Hey, man. Come on home, Carl. You're going to enjoy your time at an HBCU. I guarantee you, bro. Hey, I hated school, but I love being in the HBCU atmosphere. School can kiss my ass, but I love being in the HBCU atmosphere. I used to wake up to go to campus and not go to class. That's how much I enjoy the HBCU atmosphere. The school, but the atmosphere, oh no. So, Easton averaged 5 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists while shooting 46% in three seasons for Purdue. He's 6'7". Damn. Well, no, I'm thinking about 7'7". But he's 6'7", 225, and he started 62 games during that stretch for Purdue. Howard, however, was not his first choice when it came to the transfer. Easton initially committed to Big Ten rival Michigan this spring. So what happened? What happened? How you go from Michigan to Howard? The commitment fell through when several of his credits at Purdue did not transfer. Oh, come on, man. Why my homeboy credits ain't transferred? Why Mr. Easton's credits didn't transfer? Michigan? Y'all tripping. He also put his name in the NBA draft process twice, most recently following his junior season, in which he averaged 5 points and 4 rebounds per game. Now, Mr. Easton. Now, I'm glad you're at Howard. You're not going to get drafted 5 points and 4 rebounds, Mr. Easton. You're not. You know how many other people your size coming out that average more than that? All right. Instead of heading to the pros, Noel Easton or Mr. Easton will head to Howard. His transfer comes just over a month after five-star recruit McCool Maker committed to HU. So, damn. So, HU, Howard, better if basketball happens. And it probably will. But Howard better win me at. Howard better be the best in their conference with Maker and Mr. Easton. Come on now. Both players are part of a rehaul of the Howard University roster under Kenneth Blankley. The two may not get a chance to play together, though, as Division I non-grad transfers must sit out a year. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That boy's got – but I thought you didn't have to sit down if you went down the level. I got to read up on that. I could have swore if you went from FCS to FBS, then you could – I don't know. I thought that you could automatically play if you go down. But, still, anytime an HBCU grabs a player that a school like Michigan wanted, it's a solid grab. So, shout out to Howard out there doing their thing. They got McCool Maker. They got Mr. Eastern. So, they're getting their squad together. They're really getting their squad together. But I just thought that if you go down. I got to do my research. I thought if you go down, you could automatically play without sitting out. But either way, Mr. Eastern is a Howard Bison. Yeah, Howard Bison. All right, let's get to my school. Let's get the family. Let's get the family up in this HBCU news. Let's talk. Talk about these snakes. These snakes. The rappers. Strike and strike. These rappers, right? Florida A&M is petitioning for games in the fall, and I think there was like four games. I'm not happy about this. I'm not sold on this. I don't see the problem in sitting out a year. Yeah, it's gonna be some sacrifices. I'd rather make some goddamn sport sacrifices for life so life can flourish and thrive. Sport is not that goddamn important. As somebody who hosts a sports podcast, and I've said this multiple times, the health of every athlete that I talk about, the health of everybody in these sports realms that I talk about, the overall health is way more important than these goddamn sports. It's way more important than these sports. Playing football or any other sport is not that goddamn serious in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of a pandemic, and you all are trying to convince us that playing a sport is important. All right. And if y'all talking about, well, this is the only chance that these young people will have a chance to help their family. So these people being in your program, especially if you're a senior, these people have been in your program for at least 3 years, and the only thing you've developed on them is their athletic ability. They got a whole brain in their head. They've got a whole brain in their head. And the only thing you've developed is athletic ability. So you're telling me that these players, if they don't play a sport, after leaving your program, that if they don't play a sport, it's over? Are y'all really developing young men at y'all programs? But I'm just saying. So the Florida A&M football program has asked the NCAA for a waiver to play a four-game non-conference schedule in the fall of 2020 and has its sights on the Florida State Seminoles as a potential opponent, according to sources familiar with the schools. Now, as a Tallahassean, born and raised, I literally live between both stadiums. Like, literally. I literally live at a point where I am between both stadiums. I can walk to both stadiums from my house. From where I am right now, I can leave out my house. FSU was a closer walk. Is it? Nah, they're about the same. They're about the same distance. No, FSU was closer. FSU is closer. Now, a fight is going to happen. A fight is going to happen between FAMU and FSU if that happens, especially if school is in and students are here. A fight is going to happen. FAMU is going to get mollywhopped by Florida State. But this is just desperation. I don't have a problem with FAMU and FSU actually playing. I actually would like to see FAMU and FSU play more often. Like, I would love for that to be a yearly game with FSU need a money game. FAMU need a money game. Why not make that happen? I would love to see that. But this year, it's coming out of desperation because both schools are desperately trying to play. And especially FAMU after the MEAC canceled the season, because the ACC didn't cancel the season. The ACC said, we're going conference only. The MEAC said, we ain't playing at all. So FAMU was trying to skirt around the MEAC, still play games. So the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference, which FAMU is leaving in 2021, according to a source from Tallahassee's local WCTV news station, the league is trying to put together an abbreviated conference football schedule in the spring. So they want to do something in the spring rather than the fall. And I don't have a problem with that. Because the MEAC, to me, seems like to me the MEAC is thinking more about long-term health of the immediate and long-term health of these players, while the coaches are thinking about right now and money and positions and all that stuff, which is not in the best interest of the health of the players. So, FAMU head coach Willie Shotgun Ray Simmons, to be exact, great quarterback. Willie Simmons was one of my favorite players to watch when I was coming up. So the school has reached out to all FBS teams across the state to see about the potential of playing in the fall, saying the talks are in the preliminary nature. We put out feelers to the seven schools in the state system who play football, Simmons said, just to see what their interest would be if we ended up being able to play football this fall, being that our conference has suspended the fall season. Our athletic director is vetting all possible opportunities at this point. How about y'all vet opportunities to goddamn keep people safe? I'm totally against this. I'm against this. I love football. To me, football is the only sport. All other sports are just pretending to me. But health is more important than sport. I love humans. I love people. Sport. If you don't have no humans, you can't have no sports. You heard me? I'm cool with not watching football in 2020 to have healthy football people, healthy athletes, healthy humans in 2021. You heard me? So the Rattlers and Seminoles have never met on the gridiron. That's amazing. Despite only miles separating Dope Campbell and Brad. Miles? Probably two. Maybe two miles from Dope Campbell to Brad. You can literally walk from Dope Campbell to Brad. You can't. If the game is played at, of course the game will be played at Dope. Duh, they're going to be played at Brad. So if the game is played at Dope Camp, however, it would not be the first time the Orange and Green have taken the field. FAMU played 5 home games there in 1980 while Bragg Memorial went under renovation. FAMU Athletic Director Courtney Gosher says the program has talked with some schools but did not mention Florida State by name. I don't know if any coaches have reached out to Coach Simmons, Gosher said, but we have not had any conversations with any FCS schools. There have been some preliminary conversations with, for example, we have some conversations with South Florida. I've checked some dates with FAU, but that was 2-3 weeks ago. I wouldn't say that is story worthy. There is definitely an appetite for football. We know that. But there's a big appetite for health. But we're a long way away from that point. There's a lot of work that must be done before we get there. And the news station WCPV has reached out to Florida State for comments, but haven't heard anything back. The Seminoles still have an open spot in their schedule thanks to the ACC's revised schedule of 10 games and one out-of-conference matchup that could be FAMU to be held either in the team's home stadium or somewhere in the state. The move was made to allow the elite Southern schools to play their traditional ACC-SEC rival games, FSU versus Florida, Georgia Tech, all those things. So while the nose and fangs, while the nose and rattlers are no stranger in many sports, including the annual softball contest, the two schools, Big Three men's teams of basketball, baseball, and football have not met since 2002 at Dope Houser Stadium when FSU beat FAMU in baseball. The two infamously met on the hardwood in 1990 in a shortened game at the Donald L. Tucker Center, in which FAMU was forced to forfeit the contest after a bench-clearing brawl before halftime. And I remember that. I remember watching that. That's why I said what I said. It's probably going to be a fight. Because in 90, FAMU lost, but they might have won that fight. So that's basically it, though. FAMU is trying hard to have a football season. I just think that's just kind of irresponsible for all football programs right now. Football is the one sport that we just don't know how the fuck you're going to keep people from not getting that Rona. Like, how do you stop? How do you keep people safe from getting that Rona in football? In college football? NFL football has a better chance to contain things. You can find a bubble, put people in. How you do that in college? I don't know. But, man, that's our HBCU news. So, no, Mr. Easton, no jail, no L, how you say his name, is transferring from Purdue to Howard, and FAMU is looking to try to play football this fall. And it's rumored that they could end up playing Florida State. I doubt it. I just don't want to see football and then have to sacrifice humanity or human health. It's not that serious, right? So let's move on. Mind, body, and sport. So this article is titled Mind, Body, and Sport, The Psychologist's Perspective. And once again, the month of August is Mental Health Awareness Month for the Freedom Train podcast. I mean, for the Freedom Train Network, all the shows on the Freedom Train this month will be dedicating segments and pieces of their shows, maybe full shows, to mental health awareness in the black community, right? So, and this is an excerpt from the Sports Science Institution's Guide to Understanding and Supporting Student-Athlete Mental Wealth. Mental wellness. Mental health in sports is something that is not talked about a lot. It's been talked about more over the recent years, especially when we learned more about CTE, right? And how CTE affects the brain. Remember last year during our Mental Health Awareness Month, I had a show specifically on CTE. We went into CTE, but because of CTE, I feel we're paying more attention to mental health. But CTE isn't the only mental health issue. Athletes are dealing with mental health issues that everyday humans are dealing with because they're everyday humans themselves. In conjunction with the stress and pressures and things that they will have to deal with as an athlete, right? So let's explore the mental health of athletes, especially student athletes. So intercollegiate athletics embodies a unique and demanding culture, right? The pressures and demands on 18 to 21-year-old students are great. Their wins and losses are seen by many, questioned by many, and often criticized publicly, right? And, you know, these teams, these young adults are expected to, they're held to a higher level of accountability and a higher standard than the adults who are responsible for them, which I feel like is stupid. And I do feel like that contributes to some of the mental health issues that students may have. Even within the athletics environment, student athletes' time demands are enormous. Daily practices, competitions that may involve travel, some across time zones, full academic course load, strength and conditioning programs, sports medicine rehab appointments, present and demanded schedule, social interactions and relationships often take a backseat to the athletically related challenges and commitments because they demand a lot from these athletes. And they say, well, your school is paid for, it's free. We're going to make a lot of money off of you. Right. It's no surprise that these pressures can affect the student athletes' mental health. A well-trained psychologist with expertise in sports psychology is an ideal resource to provide care and services. But over the past 20 years, the sports psychologist's role in college sports has evolved more slowly than student athletes' needs, right? Because it's still not seen as something that's important. Sports psychologists in a lot of these programs could be seen as problematic because, hell, you helping the motherfucker think for themselves. You helping this person improve their mental their cognitions. The ways colleges and universities use sports psychologists are also vary, depending on resources and how well the athletics department understands how to incorporate these services. My question is, do a lot of athletic departments even give a damn about incorporating these services? Right? The following explains both the challenges related to the integration of sports psychology within college sports and the model schools currently use when they do take advantage of such expertise. So there's an ongoing stigma within the sports context. Student athletes, coaches, and staff tend to minimize mental disorders or psychological distress because of the expectations of strength, stability, and mental toughness inherent in sports culture. That's all. Ring the bell on that straight up. If you in athletics, it's kind of like being in the gang. You can't show weakness. Because if you show weakness, you a bitch. And if you a bitch, then I can take advantage of you. And if I can take advantage of you, then you can't help us win. And you cannot show weakness in sport. But mental health is not a weakness, but it can be seen as a weakness depending on what sporting environment you're in. If there was an environment when I was in, people could have been dealing with mental health. But you're going to be called a bitch, and you're going to be ridiculed, and they're going to exacerbate the issue in the environments that I've been in. So as a result, student athletes often avoid disclosing any mental health concerns especially if the perceived negative consequences include being rejected by teammates or coaches due to their disclosure.
Right.
Because the environment is not set up to have a healthy evaluation or a healthy to help people improve their mental wellness. The environment is not set up like that. It's not. So in many ways, the stigma further exacerbates the problem of student athlete mental health, as it inhibits effective dialogue, education, and development of resources to address these issues. Once a mental health issue is identified, resources may be limited or difficult to access. As sports medicine and athletic training has evolved, it is now common for Division I athletic departments to employ four or more full-time certified athletic trainers.
Right.
They're going to spend their money on the trainers. They're not going to spend their money on the psychologists or the people who can actually help the students in another capacity. Some schools even have in-house sports medicine physicians specifically providing medical care for student athletes. Additionally, more and more athletic programs enjoy registering dietitians, sports nutritionists to provide optimal nutritional care for the athletes. However, not many programs employ full-time or even part-time licensed psychologists. Instead, they depend on campus resources such as student counseling centers to refer for mental health issues. The problem is that there is that few students' counseling centers employ psychologists who have the training / education to address student athletes' unique psychological needs. And what's interesting is, not this week, but next week on the Freedom Train podcast series, I'm interviewing one of the counselors from Florida A&M University Counseling Center. And it's one of my good homeboys. I regard him as one of my OGs. Like, I really love this cat, man, and he just probably don't even know how much he's helped me in life. But I will have him on, and I will be asking some of these questions about, you know, athletics and things, just how they deal with some of the mental health issues with college students and college athletes. But I don't really know the extent of the assessments and the resources available for psychological and mental health needs, right? The issue of sports psychology versus clinical/counseling psychology is often confusing to athletic departments. In most of the 50 states, if not all, the term psychologist in any form is protected as a licensed professional. If professionals identify themselves as sports psychologists, then they should be able to produce their license number within their state of practice. The sport designation for those licensed psychologists should denote a competency in their training. Competency is defined in most states, includes academic preparation, training, supervision, and experience within a specific domain, for example, child psychology or forensic psychology. Therefore, a licensed psychologist identifying as a sports psychologist should be able to demonstrate training such as graduate coursework or perhaps a master's degree in physical education and ongoing supervised experiences in sports psychology. Further clarifying this distinction in training and competency is a key element in enhancing the ongoing development of providers for collegiate student athletes. The competency of licensed mental health providers/ psychologists to understand the unique nature of collegiate athletic environments. Whether it be a Division I, II, or III athletics department, it is important for the provider to understand the culture of the athletics environment to best understand the external stresses, motivations, and dynamics within that athletics environment. I just said that. This often requires that a licensed provider has previous experience as perhaps a student athlete or coach or prior role within an athletics department,
right?
Like an academic advisor or something, or have supervised experience during their training, for example, as pre-doctoral, intern, or rotation in sports psychology athletics, according to this article about NCAA. This immersive experience offers observational and experimental learning opportunities for the psychologists, which builds competency to provide care for athletes. You should have a good grasp and understanding of the sports world, of what athletes go to on a regular basis if you're going to help them, right? Lack of training models for psychologists and mental health providers in the domain of sport and performance psychology. As the role of sports psychologists within collegiate athletics has increased, it is important to note that many clinical counseling psychology programs do not typically offer graduate coursework in the domain of sports and performance psychology. I wonder why not. That's interesting. However, a few programs train students to be doctoral level psychologists and provide graduate training experience in the domain of sports psychology. An example is University of North Texas and Indiana University in Bloomington do so, for example, in both counseling psychology. Professional contamination and disruption of current services. What that mean, really? So because collegiate athletics continue to focus on concepts such as performance excellence and mental toughness, the realm of motivational gurus and mental coaches finds college athletics a prime target for their services, and they may very well ignore, minimize, and neglect the real issues of psychological health. That's true, because these programs bring in speakers all the time. Ain't no goddamn speaker gonna motivate me if my mental health ain't together. Me personally, you can bring all the speakers you want. That's not gonna motivate me. If I don't want it, I don't give a damn what you say. I have to want it, right? Individuals not trained in mental health psychology often say they will refer any athlete with a personal issue, but if they are not trained in diagnostic interviewing, then they are not likely to identify potential issues. Thus, the athletics administrator must struggle with the challenge of providing effective mental health services for student athletes, as well as providing a resource to teach coaches and student athletes psychological skills to enhance sports performance. Competent and well-trained licensed psychologists can often provide both services within the collegiate athletic program. They also may be able to supervise and coordinate an effective sports psychology team for both performance and personal counseling services. And that's wild that these programs don't put a premium on the psychological aspect of sports. I'm convinced that a lot of these athletic programs they're only convinced with making money. They're only convinced, but then I guess they'll go back to being confused, because if you're only concerned with making money, don't you think you'll be concerned with making sure that the mental health, that the mental wellness of your player is intact, that is at an optimal level, like the mental wellness of the player? But across the board, mental health, people who have mental health issues, especially in the realm of sports, because most people in the realm of sports don't understand mental health, it's seen as a weakness, or it can come off as a weakness or be treated as a weakness. I have this issue going on, and you telling me I'm a bitch, you telling me I'm soft, you telling me I don't want it. And that's not the case. My head isn't right. So if I have a torn ACL, you can understand. But if my head isn't right, my mental space isn't right, my emotional space isn't right, my psychological space isn't right, because you lack understanding and lack the education and the scholarship to really diagnose and help me along my journey, I'm seen as soft. I'm seen as somebody who don't want it. I'm seen as a burden or a hinder to the team. That has to change. That has to stop. We have to push forward new narratives. We got access to all this goddamn information. And that'd be the thing that be getting me. We got all this money, all these resources, all this technology, this information that we got, and we choose to only use the shit that make us feel good, not the things that make sure our program as a whole or the main resource, the most important resource in college athletics is the athletes. There's no more important resource in college athletics than the athletes. But we get to a point to where the athletes are seen as commodities. And if you're in a situation in the system where the athletes are seen as commodities, then their mental health will never be addressed properly. That's where we are today. Remember, parents, you're sending your kids into environments where they're seen as nothing but commodities and money makers for these white people, for these white schools, to make these white people millionaires, or your child struggles to make it financially, physically, mentally, psychologically, and emotionally, all in hopes of these athletes becoming millionaires and saving the family. That shit don't sound good to me. Sound like a road to destruction. Whole road to destruction. So we got to do better. I'm going to keep talking about it. We're going to keep bringing it up. We're going to keep doing our push, making sure that we look at these athletes as human beings, not just as fucking commodities. All right? So that's my spiel on mental health and athletics. Let's take this shit serious, especially in our black community. Remember, black folk, ain't nobody going to save us but us. Ain't nobody going to help us but us. So let's not exacerbate the issues that are in our community by only focusing on the dumb shit, only looking at these players as commodities. When we do that, we trick. All right? So something I'm not going to spend time on, but I'm going to mention because, hell, it seemed interesting. So my favorite football player of all time, the NFL's all-time leading rusher, let me give y'all his stats. Let me give y'all some of the Emmitt Smith stats. And you just type in Emmitt Smith, and the first thing come up is Emmitt Smith divorce. So let me bring up his stats. Come on now. Emmitt Smith stats. His all-time. I know he rushed for over 18,000 yards. Yep, so in his career, Emmitt Smith has 18,355 yards, a 4.2 average, 164 touchdowns total in his career as a running back. He's an 8-time Pro Bowler, 4-time All-Pro select, 3-time Super Bowl champion, 1-time league MVP, 1990 Rookie of the Year, 1993 Burt Bell Award winner. My favorite athlete or football player of all time is young Emmitt Smith. And I went to the wrong website. It better than where I'm supposed to be. All right. Tripping. So Emmitt Smith and wife Pat Smith are getting divorced after 20 years of marriage. And just note, she was, before she married Emmitt Smith, she was married to Martin Lawrence for a brief period of time. So I said that because I saw a video on YouTube and I saw a couple of videos who people are suggesting that Pat Smith is calling for a divorce now because she wants the spotlight. So I don't remember the YouTube channel or the video I was watching with the dude, but he was insinuating that Miss Pat Smith is divorcing Emmitt Smith because she feels like it's finally her time to gain the spotlight and be in the spotlight and be known by the world. I don't know what the fuck that means. I don't know how you hold that. I don't know what that means. I don't even think it's true. I don't even really care if it's true or not. But just the idea of anyone thinking that they deserve fame and notoriety. Why? Fuck you did for us. I'm not saying that's for Miss Smith, but I'm just saying overall, what you did for me, nobody's owed fame and popularity. That's earned. Those things are earned. Earn your stuff, right? But anyway, like I said, but that's according to that guy and that YouTube channel. I'm just speaking to the overall idea of that. But it says Emmy Smith and wife Pat have been together since the Hall of Famer was embarrassing defenders as a member of the Dallas Cowboys, but the two have decided to separate. And I think they went live on Instagram. They did an Instagram post, a video where they went and they talked about them divorcing. I just don't see the point in doing that. Like, we really don't give a shit that much, and it's not our business. It's really not our business, but since y'all put it out, you know. Pat, whose maiden name is Southall, issued a joint statement on social media over the weekend announcing that she and Emmitt are separated. She indicated the split is an amicable one. Hi. We're publicly sharing that after much contemplation of prayer and prayer, we have decided to separate. The statement read, we will continue to move forward with love and compassion for one another as co-parents and friends. We will work together in the best interest of our children, our family, community, and businesses as we take this journey toward the next chapter in our lives. We ask for privacy at this time. Now that is crazy. You asking for privacy publicly You're going to go on a public platform where nobody asked you to. Nobody cares if you do it or not. Nobody asked you to do that. And see, that's the point that the gentleman was making in the video, that he thinks that she wants to be in the spotlight. She wants fame, because you're going to go and make a statement in public, say, hey, me and my husband getting a divorce, but we want to be private. We want to be left to our privacy while we go through our divorce. Well, what the fuck you told us for? Because now you know you're not going to have no privacy. You shouldn't have told nobody. That was a dumb move. Don't tell nobody. If you don't want nobody to know, don't tell nobody. Simple. It's not, we don't, it's not our business. We don't need to know. I don't care to know. Some of you maybe, I don't care to know. Right? Smith, and so they got the name Smith and Southall, but the Smith, who Pat Smith, who was a former Miss Virginia USA beauty queen, they got married, and she married Emmett Smith in 2000. They had three children together. So it says Smith is South. It says this article, I don't know why they did like this, but it says Smith is South Hall's second wife. Well, no, that's not true. Smith is South Hall's second husband. That's what they meant to say. They put second wife. They didn't edit this. They didn't edit this correct. But Pat Smith, or Pat Southall, which is a maiden name, Pat Southall married Martin Lawrence. And then after the time with Martin, so she was married to Martin from 95 to 97. I remember when they broke up, and I remember when her and Emmett first got together. So she had two daughters with Martin and a couple children. I don't know how many children she had with Emmett. But Emmett, E.J. Smith, Emmett's son, Emmett and Pat's son is a top running back. He going to Stanford. I think they may have two or three children. Anyway, but I just thought this was interesting that they put this out and then asked for privacy. That just don't make sense to me. I saw something earlier today. I was scrolling through YouTube. Some dude put a video, was talking about, I didn't watch the video. I didn't have time to watch the video, but he was basically insinuating that Emmett was a simp. Why the man got to be a simp? What did Emmett do to make him a simp? For somebody who we really don't know, like, what did the man do to be a simp? That's what I want to know. And if you're saying, well, because you let his wife do this, man, come on, man, you can't. Like, a lot of these dudes will be out there acting like they control women. They got their women in check. Bitch, y'all be lying. Y'all be lying. And if y'all do, it's because y'all went for women. Y'all went for women with low self-esteem. Y'all went for women who have negative viewpoints of themselves, and y'all taking advantage of that. So stop like that. But it's just quick. Emmett Smith and his wife are getting a divorce. So if you care or not, that's the news. All right, let's move on. Something we should all get behind. Hashtag we are united. Hashtag we are united. Right? Fuck the NCAA. To ensure future generations of college athletes will be treated fairly, hashtag we are united is created. One time for the Pac-12. Y'all, football ain't that good. But I like this. I like this. Because NCAA sports exploit college athletes physically, emotionally, and academically, psychologically, mentally, all that. Also disproportionately harm black college athletics. Hashtag we are united. Because when white coaches decided that we can make money, we can make money off those jigaboos out there running with that. But look at that darky run with that ball. That's how the coaches were thinking, right? We can make money off these boys. We get these boys on our team. We win. We make more money. So there's a whole shift, because there was a conversation on the I Am Athlete podcast between Channing Frye and the SE woman. I can't remember her whole name, but they were talking about the debate was about black athletes going to PWIs over HBCUs. And it's funny because you got Channing Crowder, Fred Taylor, Reggie Wayne, Brandon Marshall, and I think Reggie Wayne may be the most he's the, well, I ain't no fan. I think Reggie Wayne's the most, maybe the most studied out of all of them. And a lot of them come from their opinions, and they got opinions and experiences. But that whole mindset was, if I'm a black college athlete, I need to go to a white school because the opportunity is going to be better. And she was trying to get them to understand the only reason the opportunities are better at white schools because they've had generations and generations and generations of black talent come and make it better. Reverse that shit. Some people have to take the sacrifice for the culture to win, for us as a people to win. But I digress. And rejecting the NCAA's claim that hashtag Black Lives Matter while also systematically exploiting black athletes nationwide. Yeah. Well, that's for the NCAA. That's for the NFL if they try to do it. That's for the NBA, the WNBA, MLB. Well, the exceptions are the NBA and WNBA. But that's why I don't understand why they're doing this kneeling and all this shit now. Because we saw the NBA. We saw the WNBA 4 years ago, 6 years ago, allowing their players to make statements and stand up against white supremacy. So I don't understand why they feel like they have to jump on this bandwagon now and take knees. That this is what the NFL needs to be doing. This is what the MLB needs to be doing because they're trying to show they're trying to save face. I don't understand why the NBA and the WNBA is doing this half-ass kneeling right now. This kneeling that ain't helping. This kneeling that is when white people tell you that it's okay to do something that wasn't okay a while ago, you took all the steam out of it. They've taken the power out of it, and now you can't. If your oppressor is telling you that it's okay to do this thing, something up their sleeve, right? Because we are being asked to play college sports in the pandemic in a system without enforced health and safety standards, and without transparency about COVID cases on our teams, to risk ourselves, our families, and our communities. Hashtag We Are United. Because we must have adequate COVID testing to help protect our health. Hashtag We Are United. Because we are prohibited from securing representation while being asked to sign documents that may serve as liability waivers. Hashtag We Are United. Because we should not be stuck with sports-related medical expenses, including COVID-19-related expenses. Hashtag We Are United. Because any player who does not feel comfortable playing this season should not be free to opt out without losing their scholarship or any eligibility. Hashtag We Are United. Because immoral rules will push us from receiving basic necessities or compensation for the use of our names, images, and likeness, while many of us and our families are suffering economically from COVID-19 fallout. Hashtag We Are United. And that should go back before COVID. Because we should be included in equitably sharing the revenue of our talents, sharing the revenue our talents generate, especially in a pandemic. Hashtag We Are United. Man, players should have been stood up and said, we ain't playing until y'all motherfuckers get this shit right. Like, players should have access to revenue sharing. Players should have been able to earn off their names, likenesses, and images. It's going to be hard to pay them, but I can, as an athlete, and I've said this many times, a college athlete on scholarship, a college musician on scholarship. If I'm a college musician on scholarship that the fucking school is paying for, I can drop an album and get paid for it and won't nobody have a problem. But if I'm an athlete that the fucking school is paying for, if I do something to make money, any little thing to make money, I'm in violation of the NCAA rules. The NCAA can suck my dick because it's a fuck-ass system. And we keep signing our children up to be a part of this fuck-ass system that's making these white people money. Black Label, go read the book Black Label White Wealth by Dr. Claude Anderson. Go read the book $40 Million Slaves. That's why I keep stressing that we got to develop the minds of our athletes, of our young black athletes. We got to develop their minds so they can exploit the system and not be exploited by the system. Because unjust rules prevent 98% of college football and basketball players who won't go pro from capitalizing economically on what will otherwise be the most valuable years of our lives, including many black players from low-income homes. Hashtag We Are United. Because eliminating lavish salaries and facility expenditures to preserve all sports must be prioritized. Hashtag We Are United. Because the NCAA has failed us and we are prepared to ensure that our conference treats us fairly, whether or not it continues its NCAA membership. Hashtag We Are United. Because the NCAA needs them. They don't need the NCAA. And forthcoming alliances with college athletes from other conferences to unite with us for our change. Hashtag We Are United. We are united in our commitment to secure fair treatment for student athletes. Due to COVID-19 and other serious concerns, we will opt out of Pac-12 fall camp and game participation unless the following demands are guaranteed in writing by our conference to protect and benefit both scholarship athletes and walk-on. So first, this is the Pac-12 football unity demands. First is health and safety protections. COVID-19 protections allow option not to play during the pandemic without losing athletic eligibility or spot on team roster. Second part of under that is prohibit, avoid, or void COVID-19 agreements that waive liability. Right. How are you going to have an agreement that waive liability in the middle of COVID-19 when I'm playing for y'all shit? Man, I ain't signing no goddamn waiver of liability. No, bitch, if I played on the COVID pandemic, it's y'all fault. Y'all the fucking adults that supposed to have this shit together. You don't sign no goddamn waiver of liability. Fuck no. Mandatory safety standards including COVID-19 measures. Player-approved health and safety standards enforced by a third party selected by players to address COVID-19 as well as serious injury, abuse, and death. So the second big point is protect all sports. Preserve all existing sports by eliminating excessive expenditures. Larry Scott, administrators and coaches to voluntarily and drastically reduce excessive pay. Nick Saban hasn't done anything to earn a fucking $9 million. Now, of course, he ain't in the Pac-12 position example. Now, I don't give a fuck how many national championships Nick Saban won. Nick Saban hasn't played one down. Nick Saban shouldn't be getting paid $9 million. Dabo Swinney, none of them. They should be getting top teacher salaries. And performance and academic bonuses, and lavish facility expenditures, and use some endowment funds to preserve all sports. As an example, Stanford University should reinstate all sports discounted by tapping into their $27.7 billion endowment. So they got the money. They're just full of that bullshit. And racial injustice in college sports and society. Well, to do that, you got to start America over. Like, this is a stupid one. They could reword this because the Pac-12 can't end racial injustice in college sports and America. You got to start America over. All you white people who claim to be against racism, you should be pushing to start America over. Shut this bitch down. Start it over. We got to do this shit over and build America back up, because you cannot build a system of inequality where there's fairness and love and no racism on the foundation of racism. So economic freedom and equality, that's the fourth point, is guaranteed medical expense coverage. So medical insurance selected by players with sports-related medical conditions include COVID-19 illness to cover 6 years after college athletics and the eligibility ends. Name, image, and likeness rights and representation. The freedom to secure representation, receive basic necessities for any third party, and earn money for use of our name, image, and likeness rights. And I can't wait to hear what Tim Tebow got to say about this. I'm light his bitch ass up. I like Tim Tebow bitch ass up if he comes saying some bullshit about this. Fair market pay, rights, and freedoms. This is another thing that they're asking. Like last thing. Under the economic freedom and equality part is distribute 50% of each sports total conference revenue evenly among athletes in their respective sports. 6-year athletic scholarships to foster undergraduate and graduate degree completion. Elimination of all policies and practices restricting or deterring our freedom of speech or our ability to fully participate in charitable work, or our and our freedom to participate in campus activities outside of mandatory athletic participation. Ability of players of all sports to transfer one time without punishment, and additionally in case of abuse or serious negligence. Ability to complete eligibility as participating in pro draft if player goes undrafted, and foregoes professional participation within 7 days of the draft, and due process rights. Hey man, college athletes need to drop their nuts and stand up and say, we ain't doing this shit until y'all meet our demands, till y'all get what we need. And the fact that only the Pac-12 is doing this, I keep telling y'all, man, especially football, I've learned that athletes are big, they're big and strong, but they're not strong. They're not powerful. They're big, athletic, and strong, but they're not strong and powerful. They're ruled by small white people. Small, unathletic white people who are not as strong as them, not as powerful as them, rule them. Why? Because they have the real power. Our athletes don't have real power. All our athletes have is notoriety. No real power. It's the difference between power and notoriety. So I'm glad Pac-12 players are doing this. I'm behind hashtag We Are United. Hashtag We Are United. Y'all got my support, and we're going to keep pushing this because inequality in the NCAA sports need to go. It need to get the hell on, and the NCAA can suck my dick. Yes, I said it. All right, let's move on and talk about money, one of my favorite subjects. Money is my new favorite sport. Making money is my new favorite sport. I'm into these stocks, man. I'm into investing and trading these stocks. That's what I'm saying. Making money is my new favorite sport. I love to see my money make money. Money is my bitch, and it makes me money. So that boy, Joey Bosa, got a new contract. Let me break this thing down for you. So at first blush, the new contract for Chargers defensive end, Joey Bosa, looked great. On closer inspection, it is spectacular. Here are the full details of the big deal Bosa signed this week per source with knowledge of the numbers. So they're breaking it down. So he gets a $35 million signing bonus. He gets a fully guaranteed roster bonus on August 15th of $7 million. His 2020 base salary is $1 million fully guaranteed at signing. 2021 base salary is $13.75 million fully guaranteed at signing. 2022 base salary is $21.25 million, which is fully guaranteed at signing. 2023 salary is $24 million guaranteed for injury after signing, guaranteed for injury at signing, fully guaranteed as of the third day of the 2020 league year. The 2024 roster bonus of $7 million is due on the third day of the league year. 2024 base salary is $15 million. 2025 roster bonus is $8.63 million due on the third day of the league year. And he has a 2025 base salary of $17 million. So the $35 million signing bonus is second only to Aaron Donald among all defensive players. However, the $7 million roster bonus due in 2 weeks pushes the upfront take to $42 million for Bosa. More significantly, Bosa becomes the first defensive player to get 3 years of competition fully guaranteed at signing. That's why the $78 million in full guarantee at signing lands at number four all time behind only Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers, and Kirk Cousins. So they gave him. They gave Joey Bosa. It's interesting Joey Bosa gets that, right? Not Aaron, but anyway. Bosa's fourth year likely will be guaranteed, even that the $24 million injury-only base salary for 2023 vets in 2022. To avoid owing him an extra $24 million, the Chargers will have to pay him $78 million for 2 seasons of football. Hey, I'm not mad at him getting the contract. I'm never mad at a player for getting these contracts. While it's not a $500 million deal like the one signed by Patrick Mahomes, Bosa blows away the early cash flow of the Bosa deal blows away the Pat Mahomes deal. For example, Mahomes received $10 million signing bonus, $25 million less than Bosa. Also, Mahomes receives a $10.825 million in 2020. Bosa gets $43 million. Through 2 years, Mahomes gets $33.6 million. Bosa, in contrast, gets $56.75 million. Through 3 years, Mahomes will make $63 million. Bosa will make $78 million. But remember, Mahomes still going to get him more money over the life of the contract. Mahomes doesn't catch Bosa in cash flow until 2023, when Mahomes will end up with $1 million more than Bosa. At that point, Bosa will be under contract for only 2 more years. Mahomes will be under contract for 8 more years. Bosa's deal compares favorably to the 5-year, $125 million extension signed by Browns defensive end Miles Garrett. Over 4 years, Garrett ends up with $22.2 million less than Bosa. Garrett's full guarantee at signing is a whopping $28 million less than Bosa. So, I ain't mad at Joey Bosa for getting his money. Get your money. God damn it, get your money. Joey Bosa got money. So, now, of course, you know, Nick Bosa, some of the Bosas have been suspected white supremacists. So, I don't know. I just said that. I don't know. They ain't got nothing to do with it. It might do. I don't know. But now let's get to baseball and COVID-19. So, baseball ain't doing shit right, because it's a whole bunch of motherfuckers coming down with COVID in the baseball world. Whole bunch of people coming down with COVID in this baseball world. So, thing is, who's to blame? And a lot of blame has been thrown around. Of course, the commissioner, as I said earlier, the commissioner has been seen, or has been, it's stated that the commissioner is blaming the players, but we're going to see. So Rob Manfred is the commissioner of the Major League Baseball. So let's read. If you listen closely between the cheers of virtual fans and the dings of tweets announcing another decision to opt out, you can hear it. The sound of MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred beginning to blame players for the season's possible collapse. On Saturday, as 20% of the league was sidelined in an attempt to combat two separate coronavirus outbreaks, Manfred got to work on his spin rate. He would not cancel the season, he told ESPN, yet. The players need to be better, he added. I'm not a quitter in general, and there's no reason to quit now. We have had to be fluid, but it is manageable. So he's saying we've got to be better. At what? How do you – at what? Rob Manfred, infectious disease expert, how do we be better? Because you're the commissioner. You should have thought about all this shit before the season started. So it comes back on you. So we should have been better. What does that mean? You should have been better. You should have came up with a better system for this shit. You're the fucking commissioner. You sound like a bitch right now, Rob Manfred, because you're saying we could have been better. What does that mean? This is all on you. You're in the driver's seat of this. You're the commissioner. So this is a tweet by Carl Ravitch. Commissioner Rob Manfred tells me we are playing. The players need to be better, but I'm not a quitter in general. There's no reason to quit now. Right? You, Rob Manfred, man, stop that dumb shit and shut the season down till you get better control of everything that's going on. You got to put your motherfuckers in the bubble. So you got to find a small city and build a whole bunch of baseball stadiums and play baseball with no fans if you want to really have a season. You got to take over a small city, build stadiums, and guess what? I don't see how you're going to make that happen now. Shut the season down and get ready for the next year. Because these goddamn COVID cases are rampant. Check out last week's episode. I was talking about it. So this is, of course, nonsense. The I'm not a quitter soundbite got the mockery it received. It deserved. Refusing to put a stop to a public health threat amid a public health catastrophe is not stick-to-itiveness. It's negligence. But his more absurd words were the players need to be better. Rob Manfred, you sound like a bitch. And you sound like somebody who doesn't want to be accountable for your actions and your decisions as the commissioner of Major League Baseball. Manfred needed to be better. If this blows up, it would be his fault. At last count, COVID-19 has stricken 17 Marlins players and two coaches and at least five members of the Cardinals. The league permitted Miami to play the Phillies last Sunday with four positive tests and other results pending. By Monday, the number had ballooned to 11 players and two coaches. Yeah, Rob Manfred, the league allowed it, but it's the players' fault. All right. The reports of the positive test were followed almost immediately by reports suggesting that players had not been living entirely. They haven't been isolated, basically. Duh. That may be true, but the vaunted 113-page operations manual doesn't say they have to. Baseball was never going to get 100% compliance from 100% of its participants 100% of the time. Manfred should have known that when he decided in June to impose a 60-game season, if he thought it would only be safe to play if no one ever tested positive, he should have fought harder for a bubble. Right. Right. You're not going to put players in the bubble, but then you say, well, oh, man, they keep getting COVID. Bitch, they're not in the controlled environment. The players didn't want to spend 4 months in quarantine, and the owners, his bosses, were not eager to lose their stadium sponsorships either. So they settled on a plan that included this cop-out. MLB would not formally restrict the activities of covered individuals when they're away from club facilities, but will expect the covered individuals in each club to ensure that they will act responsibly, or in other words, do what you want, but if you catch COVID, it's your fault. So say I go pick my mom up, take my mom to church, go sit in church with my mom, and then come back. Or I won't even go to church, go to the grocery store, go something. Like, you, I got a problem with a lot of us regular-ass people thinking we are COVID experts. You're not a fucking COVID expert. Stop acting like you are. You're not. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. If you're not going to put these people in a controlled environment, how do you expect COVID not to be spread? Rob Manfred, you a dumbass. The league built in some cushion for that outcome. With 30-man rosters, three-man traveling taxi squads, and 60-man player pools, MLB never planned to shut the season down after the first person tested positive. Because MLB stupid. So the goal all along has been to limit the spread, and that's the league's job. That's the league's job, not the player's job. The league doesn't understand that, which it helpfully reminded fans on Friday when it announced the past week COVID-19 test results. First, it offered the useless statistic of 0.2% of the samples had been new positives, which means the league gets credit for every negative test, but escapes blame for all but one positive. Then it added, apparently triumphantly, that 21 to 29 positives were from a single MLB club. The remaining 29 clubs had 8 positives, 2 major league players, 1 alternate site player, 5 staff. That did not make the point MLB wanted to make. The league's protocols are designed to allow for 8 positives among 29 teams. That's supposed to thwart 21 on a single team. That shit sounds stupid. It's not clear yet where the protocols failed. Shit, overall, the protocols failed from beginning to end. There were no real protocols put in place to keep people safe. Let's just be real. The two days before the Marlins' first positive test after an exhibition game against the Braves, Miami manager Don Mattingly lamented, "We had only 3 guys and nowhere to go." He said, "We had all these guys and nowhere to go. Then we've got a zillion guys in the dugout, so there's no way we're social distancing." 8 days later, Cubs first baseman Anthony Rizzo, a cancer survivor who is likely at higher risk for COVID-19 complications than the average person, tweeted his frustration. "Player safety at MLB, let's sit around for 8-plus hours inside the clubhouse. I'm sure I can find that somewhere. I can find that somewhere in the 113 player safety protocol. The protocols are woefully inadequate, especially if it's 113 pages of bullshit. Obviously, you got 113 pages of toilet tissue. Something that people can wipe their ass with if you got these COVID cases that's happening, because you just want to play baseball and make money. At the end of the day, all these rounds are just trying to play is about money if you can't create a safe environment. The protocols are woefully inadequate, so the weak spot could be anywhere. It would be almost impossible for the league to identify and definitively which is one of the challenges of playing baseball outside of the bubble during a pandemic in the country with one of the world's worst responses. You start to understand why Canada read those 113 pages and all but evicted the Blue Jays from Toronto. I don't blame them. You ain't blaming that dumb American shit in our country. America has done a great job of showing the rest of the world of how fucking stupid Americans are. America has done a good job since the pandemic broke out, showing the rest of the world of how idiotic America is. The land of the free, home of the brave, and home of dumbasses. Because we ain't that free and we ain't that brave. All right? The protocols are woefully inadequate. So whatever the answer, players should be genuinely frightened that they believe that the protocols could protect them. It's become clear that they cannot. So Manfred is just one of the latest in a proud tradition of sheep herds blaming their flocks for being eaten. Well, if you hadn't been breathing, you wouldn't have got COVID. Bitch, if you came up with a better protocol, there wouldn't be no COVID. Consider the government officials who in recent weeks have publicly berated young people for spreading COVID-19 at bars. Well, who opened the bars? Like here in Florida. Florida has, and I said this before, as a Floridian, as a proud Floridian, Florida is the dumbest state in the world. Florida is literally the dick, the penis of the United States and the dumbest state in the world. And Ron DeSantis, you a fuck ass. You a stupid ass. Governor, shut this shit down. Ball players are not epidemiologists. For the most part, they are men in their 20s and early 30s who spent more time in batting cages than in biology classes. They're athletes. MLB has access to the best infectious disease specialists in the country. If this falls apart, it's not the guys in the baseball pants who are responsible. Don't blame individuals or institutional ineptitude. Manfred needs to be better, and he wasn't, because Manfred is a bitch, and Manfred is a blamer. And that's why he's blaming everybody else for his fuck-ups. The people who run the league set this shit up the way it is, and now it's not working, and they blaming everybody else. If that ain't America, that ain't American, I don't know what it is. Because it's not America's fault. When shit go wrong, it don't be America's fault. It be the people who it went wrong for. That's stupid as hell. Hey, man. Baseball, y'all wild. Just all y'all people who really, really trying to push sports at this time, when y'all know y'all don't have contained environments like the NBA, the WNBA, or the MMA things, when they have better control, better protocols in place, I just don't understand y'all. Y'all clearly don't care about these people that y'all claim to care about. Y'all only care about money and maintaining positions. So, yeah. Y'all need to reevaluate y'all as adults. Irresponsible as children. It's all about money. It's all about. So, let me give y'all some scores from. How far back am I? Let me get my scores and stuff went all the way up like they supposed to be. I thought they were. God damn, they turned down. It's colder than the bitch in. They turned down. That bitch hit me. Alright, so today is, so let me go back to the second. So let's go back. So let me catch y'all up on these scores, these baseball scores. So I'm going to start from last Sunday and bring y'all up to where we are. So for August 2nd, we had the Reds versus the Tigers. So the Reds defeat the Tigers 4-3. The Orioles defeat the Tampa Bay Rays 5-1. The Mets fall to the Braves. One time for the Braves, and they're 7-3. Braves beat the Mets 4-0. The White Sox beat the Kansas City Royals 9-2. The Twins beat the Indians 3-1. The Cubs beat the Pirates 2-1. The Rockies top the Padres 9-6. The Rangers topped the Giants 5-9, 9-5. The Dodgers beat the Diamondbacks 3-0. The Astros beat the Angels 5-6, 6-5 rather. The Astros beat the Angels 6-5. The Athletics beat the Mariners 3-2. The Reds beat the Tigers 4-0. The Red Sox fall to the Yankees 9-7. Yankees won 9-7. So that was the second. On the third, we have the Reds who beat the Indians 3-2. Yankees beat the Phillies 6-3. The Mets beat the Braves 7-2. The White Sox beat the Brewers 6-4. The Twins over the Pirates 5-4. Cubs over the Royals 2-0. The Rockies over the Giants 7-6. Dodgers fall to the Padres 5-4. The Athletics drop their nuts on the Mariners 11-1. Okay. So that was the fourth. Let's go to the that was the third. Let's go to the fourth. So August 4th, we had the Twins top the Pirates 7-3. The Indians top the Reds 4-2. The Rays top the Red Sox 5-1. The Nationals beat the Mets 5-3. The Braves actually dropped their nuts on the Blue Jays 10-1. The White Sox beat the Brewers 3-2. The Cubs beat the Royals 5-4. Marlins beat the Orioles 4-0. Giants fell to the Rockies 5-2. The Astros beat the Diamondbacks 8-2. Athletics over the Rangers 5-1. Dodgers over the Padres 5-2. And the Angels over the Mariners 5-3. So that's the fourth. Let's go to the fifth. I'm fine. I thought I had a better way to do this. So the Phillies beat the Yankees 11-7. Mariners over the Orioles 1-0. The Mets over the Nationals 3-1. Red Sox beat the Rays 5-0. Twins beat the Padres 5-2. The Blue Jays beat the Braves 2-1. The Indians beat the Reds 2-0. Yankees top the Phillies 3-1. Cubs over the Royals 6-1. Brewers blank the White Sox 1-0. The Marlins beat the Orioles 2-1. Giants over the Rockies 4-3. Diamondbacks over the Astros 14-7. The Athletics beat the Rangers 6-4. Dodgers beat the Padres 7-6. And the Mariners beat the Angels 7-6. Come on now. So on the 6th, we have Padres over the Twins 6-5. The Rockies over the Giants 6-4. And this is August 6th. The Athletics over the Rangers 6-4. The Angels over the Mariners 6-1. Phillies over the Yankees 5-4. The Indians dropped their nuts on the Reds 13-0. The Braves beat the Blue Jays 4-3. Diamondbacks beat the Astros 5-4. The Royals beat the Cubs 13-2. Marlins beat the Orioles 8-7, and the Brewers beat the White Sox 8-3. Let's go to the 7th. The Orioles beat the Nationals, dropped their nuts on the Nationals 11-0. The Rays blanked the Yankees 1-0. The Tigers beat the Padres 17-13. Mariners beat the Mets 4-3. Blue Jays fell to the Red Sox 3-5. The Royals beat the Twins 3-2. The White Sox beat the Indians 2-0. The Reds over the Brewers 8-3. The Rangers over the Angels 4-3. The Athletics over the Astros 3-2. Padres over the Diamondbacks 3-0. Dodgers beat the Giants 7-2. And the Rockies beat the Mariners 8-4. All right, let's go to the 8th, to August 8th. See what happened. The Indians beat the White Sox 7-1. The Yankees beat the Rays 8-4. Tigers beat the Padres 11-5. The Athletics beat the Astros 3-1. The Yankees fell to the Rays 3-5. The Braves fell to the Phillies. The Braves got blanked by the Phillies 5-0. The Orioles over the Nationals 5-3. Twins fell to the Royals 6-9. The Rangers beat the Angels 2-0. Reds over the Brewers 4-1. Mets over the Marlins 8-4. Blue Jays over the Red Sox 2-1. Giants over the Dodgers 5-4. Diamondbacks over the Padres 3-2. The Rockies over the Mariners. They blanked the Mariners 5-0. and come up. So that's the latest scores from the week of MLB. So let's bring you up to speed on what happened with the WNBA. So starting off on August 2nd, the Phoenix Mercury, and I watched this. I did watch this game. This was a pretty good game. The Mercury beat the Liberty 96-67. Young lady Jasmine Jones from FAMU High School went to Louisville. I like her, but I felt she could have played with more control. I like her aggressiveness. She ain't scared of nobody. She out there doing her thing. I just felt like she'd play with a little more control. I felt the whole Liberty team. And granted, they're a young team. They are a young team, and the best player, I cannot say her last name, right? I can't remember her last name. She's from Oregon. Young lady from Oregon. Supposed to be her best player. She was injured. She's not out there. But I felt like the Liberty could have played with more control. I didn't think they was going to beat the Mercury, because when I seen the Mercury had Diana Taurasi, Skylar Diggins-Smith, and Brittany Grant, I was like, shit. And then they have another young lady, I can't remember her name, she came off the bench, and she lit the shit up. Phoenix Mercury got a squad, man. So, Liberty shouldn't have beat them. The Indiana Fever beat the Atlanta Dream 93-77. The Dallas Wings fell to the Las Vegas Aces 70-79. So that was the second. So on the fourth, the Chicago Sky topped Dallas Wings 82-79. Phoenix Mercury beat the Atlanta Dream 81-74. The Sun, I can't remember who the Sun is, but Sun. Was the Sun. The Connecticut Sun. Okay. The Connecticut Sun fell to the Seattle Storm 74-87. So bring up August 5th. The Minnesota Lynx beat the New York Liberty 92-66. The Las Vegas Aces beat the Washington Mystics 83-77. The LA Sparks beat the Indiana Fever 86-75. August 6th, the Seattle Storm beat the Atlanta Dream 93-92. The Connecticut Sun beat the Dallas Wings. Is that Dallas Wings? Yeah, the Dallas Wings, 91-68. The Connecticut Sky, Chicago Sky, is it? Yeah, I'm fucking up. Chicago Sky fell to the Phoenix Mercury, 86-96. Let's see, we have the Indiana Fever on the, what was that, the, so on August 8th, we had the Indiana Fever, who fell to the Minnesota Lynx, 80-87. New York Liberty over the Washington Mystics, 74-66. The Sparks fell to the Aces, 86-82. Then we had Sunday, the Dream fell to the Wings, 75-85. Sky beat the Sun 193, and the Mercury lost to the Sun to the Storm 68-74. So let's give you the past week's NBA scores. But the Lakers haven't been playing real good. Lakers dropped a couple games last week. So let me get. All right, so start August 5th. The 76ers over the Wizards 107-98. The Thunder beat the Lakers 105-86, which that shouldn't have happened. The Raptors beat the Magic 109-99. Celtics beat the Nets 149-115. No defense. No defense by the Nets. Shout out to Jason Tatum. The Kings beat the Pelicans 140-125. These motherfuckers just say fuck defense in the NBA, huh? The Heat fell to the Bucks 116-130. The Pacers fell to the Suns 99-114. The Clippers beat the Mavericks, did a good job against the Mavericks 126-111. Trailblazers over the Nuggets 125-115. And the Rockets beat the Lakers 113-97. That was on the 6th. So Saturday, The Jazz fell to the Spurs, 111-119. The Grizzlies beat the Thunder, 121-92. 76ers beat the Magic, 108-101. The Celtics beat the Raptors, 122-100. Pelicans beat the Wizards, 118-107. And the Nets beat the Kings, 119-106. Sunday, you got the Clippers. No, my bad. Saturday's game. The Clippers and the Trailblazers, 122-117. The Clippers over the Trailblazers, 122-117. The Lakers fell to the Pacers, which they shouldn't have, 111-116. The Mavericks beat the Bucks, 136-132. Luka Doncic balled out, 30-point triple-double. The Nuggets beat the Jazz, 134-132. No defense. That was an overtime game. And the Suns beat the Heat, 119-112. So that's me catching y'all up on all the latest sports stories or on what happened in the NBA the past week, what happened in MLB this past week, what happened in WNBA this past week. Keep you up and keep you up to date on everything sports that's going down. It's time for my weekly rant, and I got two rants. One on funny as shit. One on I'm really just gonna be getting on Buddy and letting him have it, cause he got caught beating his meat. But and then I'm gonna get on an Angels employee who contributed to the death of a young man by distributing fentanyl, allegedly. So, I'm going to throw my alleges out. Allegedly, there's a video showing the arrest of the Toronto Blue Jays catcher for jacking off, for beating his meat, for having a knuckle knockout. And now beating that meat, he got caught beating his meat in his car. Man, I would have stayed in the facility, went to the bathroom and rubbed one out. Some I took my ass home and rubbed one out. I can go home, take my clothes off, and lay out butt naked and turn my flick up loud. Cause they say he got caught watching the flick and beating his meat. So, cause they say people called the police because they saw him in the parking lot in his car beating that meat. Hey man, I like masturbation. Masturbation is good. I think everybody should masturbate. But it's where you do it that matters. Don't be whacking your meat off in public now. So footage of Toronto Blue Jays catcher Reese McGuire, his name is Reese McGuire, arrested for reportedly masturbating in public has been unearthed. TMZ Sports, of course TMZ, released the police body cam footage that shows authorities detaining the Jays catcher after he was caught in a compromising situation in the parking lot of a Dunedin, Florida strip mall. He would be beating his meat off in Florida. It would be in Florida. I guess people say, well, it must have been the Florida air that got to him. Nah, we jack off. We beat our meat in Florida. We some heavy meat beaters in Florida. I ain't gonna lie. We some heavy meat beaters in Florida. We beat the shit out of our meats in Florida, but we do it in private. If you listen to this and you haven't masturbated this week, go ahead and pause this. Go rub, if you a man, rub you out one. If you a woman, flip that bean. Then come back and finish listening to this. Masturbation is good, right? But do it in the privacy of your home. Hey, man, lotion, shea butter, lubricants. Just, good shit, right? The video only showed some footage of McGuire as cops say the cameras malfunctioned while recording. Officers can be heard asking McGuire if he was aware that people had reported that they had seen him half naked in the car. TMZ Sports reported McGuire attempted to explain his side of the story before eventually confessing, "I realize what an idiot, what a dumb place to be hanging out." I'm going to play some of that. So, why would you come to a parking lot just to masturbate? An officer asked the obviously embarrassed McGuire. I just don't know. I don't know why I chose to beat my meat right here. Maybe it was the Florida air that made me want to beat my meat right here in the parking lot. The 25-year-old, that's what he replied. McGuire can be heard apologizing to authorities, stating, I made a mistake having my pants down and doing what I was doing. You didn't make a mistake. You did what you intended to do.
We called here today for your white SUV.
This is him.
Did you know that people were calling?
I did.
Okay. When did we get here?
I was here maybe 10 minutes before, yes. That's when I pulled out there.
Beat that meat. Beat that meat.
And by the time I saw you guys, I realized it was harder. And that was the person probably.
So whenever the car pulled up there, you didn't know that they were watching you.
No.
Doing what you're doing. Okay. And when did you realize that, that people were here? Like, that's not helpful.
I was in the bar, and then at one point I kind of was checking to make sure no one was.
Why he beat that meat?
And then at that point I realized what an idiot, what a dumb place to be. And,
you weren't hanging out, bitch. You was jacking off.
So, I mean, if you're down at an apartment next to the stadium, why would you come to a parking lot and ask?
Right. He couldn't hold that nut.
I mean, like
he had to get that nut out.
For the apartment, or
yeah.
Okay, and is this like a weird situation where you feel
it's like in the studio, so yeah.
Yeah. But you feel like
I have the reason why. No, I just said art.
Me.
Okay. All right. There's two phones in there. Are they both your phones, or are they?
Yeah.
And he was watching. He had a flick going on the other one. He had a flick going on one of them phones.
Not sure what goes on here, but as far as I've realized that I didn't take him out of the pants down.
This shit, wow. This shit is wild.
And this way I, you know.
Nah, bitch, you ain't getting out of this one.
You know, as
far as ain't nobody home. You just can't be being in meeting public like that.
Okay.
Ah, sound.
All right. Sir, Paul.
So now they just got him in the back of the car and stuff, and that's basically what he was saying. So from now on, everybody in the league should call him Master Bates. Reese McGuire, a.k.a. Master Bates. Parking lot. The parking lot puller. Hey, the parking lot puller. Hey, man. Go home and jack off, bro. Go home. Pull a flick up on your TV. Turn that shit up loud. Lay out. Get butt naked and jack off. Light candles. Put some new music. Whatever you need to do and jack off at your house. Ain't nothing wrong with jacking off. But there's everything wrong with jacking off in your car in public, cuz. They got laws against that shit. There's laws against jacking off in public. I wonder what he was using to clean up. What y'all think Buddy used to clean up? He was just skeeting everywhere. Oh shit, that was a good one. Oh, I ain't got nothing to wipe up with. I bet you he just rubbed to come in. He rubbed it in like lotion. That's probably what he did. Cause I'm like, if I'm the officer, bitch, I don't want to touch you. What did you do with the cum? How did you wipe the cum up? Was you beating off? Did you do the dry rub? Did you beat off with nothing? Did you have some type of lubricant? I don't understand people who beat off with no lubricant either. I don't understand that, you know. The dry rub, but that's a whole nother subject. But did he use lubricant? Did he dry rub? What did he use to clean up the skeet? That's another nickname for him, Young Skeeter. Master Bates, the parking lot puller, young Skeeter, white knuckles. Buddy, take your dumb ass home, man. You got to be the biggest dumbass in the world, man. Take your dumbass home and jack your dick, man. Masturbation is a private act. Dick jacking is a private act. Unless you with somebody, y'all want to do y'all mutual masturbation and shit. For me personally, dick jacking is a private thing. Right? That's my time. When I jack off, that's my time. Right? Ain't nobody else's time. That's my time in the privacy of my shit, so I can watch the shit that I want to watch and jack off the way I want to jack off and be as loud as I want to be because I'm in the privacy of my shit. And like I say, masturbation is good. If you were inspired by this podcast to go jack off, go jack off. Go rub your bean. Go flick your bean, ladies. But I'm just saying, in a public parking lot in a car after you just left practice, and when you down the street from your private quarters, what type of fucking sexual shit you got going on with? Well, how, you were so horny, and you he was treating that like he had to take a shit. I'm so horny, I got to stop and jack off right now, because if I don't jack off at this moment, something gonna happen. I ain't gonna be right. But I got to jack off at this particular moment. Because if I don't jack off at this particular moment, oh my God, the world is gonna end. McGuire, young Master Bates. Reese McGuire, aka parking lot puller, aka the white knuckle assassin, aka young Skeeter, aka Master Bates. You 25. And you stupid. So that leaves the question, are you a sexual deviant? I mean, I'm not saying you are. Not accusing you of being a sexual deviant, but the question has to be asked, are you a sexual deviant? For you to go into the parking lot and just pull one out and just ow! 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 Give me that nut! Ow! 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 Come on, bruh. Ain't nobody saying don't jack off. But what we are saying is take your dumb ass home and jack off in your private quarters. Everybody don't need to see you or know you jacking off. Everybody jack off. People gonna have jokes about you jacking off. But more so the jokes about you getting caught jacking off in public. Why? Because everybody jack off. If you're an adult and you don't masturbate, something wrong with you. You're missing that. Go masturbate. But you can't be masturbating in public settings. Only masturbate in your private quarters, on your own time, by yourself, doing you. Don't invite nobody else unless somebody want to come in and be a part of your shit. But y'all got to stop doing these sexually crazy acts, man. You about worse than these damn OnlyFans girls who be jacking off in their car. It's going to see a lot of the OnlyFans girls getting arrested for indecent conduct, lewd and lascivious conduct for jacking off in their car. I guess Reese McGuire got him an OnlyFans page. He was recording himself jack off in his car. You stupid ass, man. Stupid ass, boy. All right, man, so let's get to this last story. So former Angels employee Eric K. charged with distributing fentanyl in connection with Tyler Skaggs' death. So, corrections and clarifications. A previous version of this story misstated the manner in which charges were brought against K. He was charged by a criminal complaint. Okay, so former Los Angeles Angels employee have been charged by federal authorities in Texas for distributing fentanyl in connection with the death of pitcher Tyler Skaggs last year. U.S. Attorney Aaron Neely Cox announced on Friday. Fuck you doing, Eric? Eric K., the team's longtime director of communications, was arrested and arraigned at a federal courthouse in Fort Worth, Texas on Friday, according to Neely Cox. The 45-year-old K. faces up to 20 years in federal prison if convicted. Any loss of life from a fentanyl overdose is a tragedy, Neely Cox said. All we can hope is that we learn from this tragedy. Tyler Skaggs' death coming as it did in the midst of an ascendant baseball career should be a wake-up call. Michael Molfetta, Kay's attorney, said in a statement that Skaggs' death is a tragedy and addiction is a debilitating and destructive disease. He said his client traveled from California to Texas to surrender himself to authorities and will patiently wait for his opportunity to make his own story known. The courtroom is the best and only place to litigate this matter, Molfetta said. Our defense team is working diligently to bring truth to light. Skaggs, a left-handed pitcher, was found dead in the Texas hotel room in July 2019 while the team was on a road trip. He was 27 years old. The Tarrant County Medical Examiner's office determined that he had ethanol, fentanyl, and oxycodone in his system at the time of death. God damn, Tyler. What were you trying to escape? What was going on in your life, Tyler? God damn. It was later ascertained that, but for the fentanyl, Mr. Skaggs would not have died. Neely Cox's office wrote in a news release, well, shit, how you figure? He had all that shit in him. He had three different drugs in him. According to a criminal complaint filed last week, and unsealed Friday, Kay initially denied knowing that Skaggs used drugs and told investigators that he had last seen Skaggs when they checked into a hotel on June 30th, the day prior to his death. Federal investigators, however, later obtained text messages between Kay and Skaggs, identified in the complaint as T.S., from later that evening in which Skaggs asked Kay to deliver pills to his hotel room. Ho sick many, huh? I don't know what that means. Hosick many. I guess he's saying how many. Kate asked Skaggs in a text message obtained by investigators. I guess that's fucked up typing. Just a few, like five, the pitcher replied. The two exchanged messages again just before midnight, according to investigators, doing which Skaggs gave Kate his room number. According to the criminal complaint, federal authorities determined that Skaggs and Kay had a history of narcotic transactions. The complaint also alleged that Kay would distribute these pills to Skaggs and others in their place of employment and while they were working. The Angels said in a statement that they have fully cooperated with law enforcement and MLB since Skaggs' death and also hired a former federal prosecutor to conduct an independent investigation. We learned that there was unacceptable behavior inconsistent with our code of conduct, and we took steps to address it. The team said our investigation also confirmed that no one in management was aware or informed of any employee providing opioids to any player, nor that Tyler was using opioids. Y'all shouldn't know. Should know that bitches was talking. In a statement released through attorney Rusty Harden, the Skaggs' family said it would encourage the Angels to make public the findings of that independent investigation. But y'all also have to take into account that Skaggs did choose to take these drugs. Skaggs did make that choice. So arrest the motherfucker for selling them. Arrest his ass. Arrest him and throw his ass under jail. Give him the same sentences y'all usually give black people. Them hard, long sentences that y'all give black people. Give them that shit. Give them that shit. I mean, I don't have no problem with that. Shit, you do it to black people all the time. But Eric Kay, throw his ass under the jail. But you also have to, Tyler Skaggs, even though Tyler Skaggs is deaf, accountability has to be placed at Tyler Skaggs' feet because Tyler Skaggs did choose to take these drugs. So accountability does have to be laid at his feet. But Eric Kay, you are guilty for distributing drugs. You are a drug dealer. Eric K., you are a drug dealer. You need to be treated as such. Shouldn't be out here selling fucking drugs. You selling drugs. But think about that, though. Think about the way that they paint black people in the light of drug dealers. This dude works for a Major League Baseball team in the communications department, and he's selling drugs. He's the director of communications for the Los Angeles Angels, and he sells drugs on the side. But y'all always looking at our communities when it comes to drugs, never looking at the white community. And the white community bring the shit in, the white community indulging it more than we do. But we are the biggest losers when it comes. Throw Eric K. ass under the jail. Fuck Eric K. and everything he stands for and everything he lives. Throw him under jail. Shouldn't be selling drugs. But you do have to hold Tyler Skaggs accountable for taking drugs. But Eric K., I don't got no love for you. Throw your ass away. Lock you up. Bye. Bye. Fuck you and everything you stand on. Hey, man, it's a long show today, but that's my show today. That's this week's episode of the Fix Sports Podcast. You heard me? I appreciate everybody tuning in. Make sure y'all support your homeboy. You support the Fix on Patreon at patreon.com/thefix. Make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. You can contact me, email joe@freedomtrainradio.com. On Instagram, The Real Joe Ward. Twitter, Joe Ward 84. Freedom Train Network on Instagram. Freedom Train Net on Twitter. Freedom Train Network on Facebook. Like I said, visit the website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Man, we ain't going to stop. We can't stop. We won't stop. We're going to keep dropping this heat on y'all, man. So that being said, man, two fingers in the air like a player because I'm up out of here, man. It's great doing this episode with y'all. It's kind of long, down to 2 hours, but it don't matter. I had a lot to say, so. Catch y'all on the flip side, man. You know how we do. Tallahassee, ain't people stand up. Let's stop.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Austin Jackson back looks up, you can put it on the board, yes! Back to back, Jack! And it is
4-1. Jackson has it, the All-American tight end is going in, and Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out, I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynch is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless.